door, slam shut, and it's on.
That's pretty darn creepy.
Listen, this is gonna sound totally crazy, and I know that, but I'm having this feeling lately that maybe whatever happened to us when we were little, I think it's starting again.
I don't want to talk about this, Christy.
I just remember being scared all the time.
Whatever it was, it thrived on fear. The more we paid attention to it, the worse it got. You need to leave this alone.
Welcome to Now Playing's Paranormal Activity Retrospective Series.
You promised me you weren't going to mess with that stuff.
You cannot run from this. It will follow you.
Hosted by Arnie.
They just about think he's the coolest guy ever.
Jacob.
I know that elders like Jacob can feel kind of intense, but as long as you stick with me, you'll be fine.
And Stuart.
There are these malevolent evil spirits that only exist to cause pain and commit evil for their own amusement.
This podcast will contain harsh language, movie spoilers, and may try to scare you with loud, sudden banging.
And you're not in control. It is in control. And if you think you're in control, then you're being an idiot.
Listener discretion is advised.
You know, we can't just let this affect us that much. If we do that, the terrorists win.
Today we're discussing Paranormal Activity, the Ghost Dimension.
Can we just start by saying there's no ghosts in these movies? We've been told repeatedly they're demons. Shouldn't this be the Demon Dimension?
That was one of my first notes too. I agree. It should be the Demon Dimension.
Starring. Now let me stop there. Have you heard of any of these people?
I mean, Reeve said this whole series. I don't know why you're getting tough with number six.
Dan Gill has been in a Kevin Hart comedy, the guy with the mustache.
Chris J. Murray, Britt Shaw, the famous Dan Gill. Ivory George, who I've actually seen before.
In what?
She was in The Crazy Ones, that Robin Williams sitcom that made him kill himself.
Oh, okay. This is the child.
Yes. Directed by Gregory Plotkin. This is the Now Play co-host that should have stayed at mom's, Arnie.
And Stuart.
And this is the co-host with particles of dipshit in his aura, Jacob.
Okay, I may be stating the obvious, but something went really wrong with the Ghost Dimension. Like, it came out 2 years late wrong, and there are 5 writers on this, and none of them are the writers from the other movies.
Okay, well, you're the one doing the research. Why did it went so wrong?
I can't tell you. No one's talking. I mean, I could theorize, but here's what I know. The plan was a year after Paranormal 4, this would be part 5. That was what was always projected. And then for whatever reason, all of a sudden we have this quote-unquote spinoff that popped up on the schedule.
Which they knew of when 4 came out because they put on that teaser scene.
Right, but that October 2013 date didn't even get made by that one. So, like, they both missed that. Marked Ones came out in January 2014. Okay, Ghost Dimension will come out by that October, and then it didn't happen then. Is it the 3D effects? This is a movie that was, I assume, post-conversion 3D. You know, there's some digital stuff that hasn't been in previous Paranormal Activities. I'm assuming that might have delayed it a little bit, but 2 years? I don't know why it took 2 years to get this thing out.
It wasn't the 3D, I'll tell you that right now. I watched it in 3D. Most of this movie is not in 3D. At one point, I took off my glasses because there was a smudge, and I went to clean the glasses, and I realized there was nothing ghosting. Only during ghost effects is there any 3D at all. The rest of this movie is 2D. So their 3D is perhaps 10 minutes of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I watched this in 2D, and I figured whenever you get a little glitch when they use their ghost dimension camera, like maybe that little glitch was in 3D, or there's some obvious like ghost, or sorry, demon effects going on. Those got to be in 3D, but I figured that was it. That was the only time it'd be ghosts in 3D.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a joke that like all of these movies are shot on low-res video, and all of a sudden for the 6th one, they're going to trot out 3D. Like, it was funny enough they put it in IMAX, but now 3D?
No, that totally makes sense. These are carnival rides, and 3D, yes, that's the ultimate carnival ride for a film. Like, it totally makes sense to me that you'd want to get here.
I want to say, though, they were late on the trend at 2015.
Mm-hmm.
The trend was already there in 2009 when Avatar came out, and then Avatar blew it up by showing how great 3D could be theatrically, but by 2015, people had been like, you know, I'm kind of tired of getting the headaches.
Well, no, here it is. You had to have a credible reason to have this in 3D, and it, you know, you just don't come up with Spirit Camera off the top of your head. Years of thought went into that.
No, I'm telling you guys, this movie was delayed 2 years. If it had come out as planned, it would be right at the end of the trend when it was all failing. Now, instead, it's coming way after the fact when nobody's going to pay those 3D prices, and maybe nobody wants to see Paranormal Activity in theaters at all. Which is why Paramount just goes with the plan, we're going to do streaming the same day it comes out in theaters. And a lot of theaters go, oh, no, you didn't. And they don't let the movie run in their theaters. And consequently, this is the lowest box office opening for a Paranormal Activity movie.
Wait. The one they want to do in 3D, the one you have to go to theaters to, because most people don't have a 3D setup at home, especially with streaming. I don't know if you could stream 3D. That's the one that they release same day streaming? Like, that makes no sense. Like, this is the gimmick one. Like, this is the one where you want to drive people to the theaters.
Well, my understanding was it wasn't same day. It was going to be like 3 weeks later, but I think the 3D would give you a reason to go to the theaters in that 3 weeks.
Yeah, and I also think that Paramount could smell that this thing just, it was over, right? The trend was over. Like, even Part 5 had told them that the box office is rapidly shrinking. The idea that we're going to make $100 million off these things, long gone. And in fact, a $10 million production, the most expensive Paranormal Activity in America, it only makes 18. Like, really, that's just a flat-out bomb. Even at its low budget, that's a flop. Add the international gross, they get $60 million more. Is that worth it? I don't know.
It's profitable. I mean, when you have a $10 million budget, you're gambling so little. 80, you've at least pocketed some, although Hollywood accounting probably costs this a $1 billion loss.
Yeah, well, and then there's also, you have to market these things in all these different countries, and I don't know, that does cost some money. So I don't think, yes, was this profitable? Absolutely, because even with the 3D stuff, this thing is cheap. But I think that the reason why this came to an end, you know, they billed it as some kind of ending, but I think the box office is what ultimately declared the fact that this franchise was over. Which version did you guys see? Of course, there are two different cuts. I saw them both. Unrated and theatrical?
I'm assuming I saw the unrated because that's what I've been sent to me for the other ones, but is there like a key scene that would tell me?
Yes. Are you seeing Santa Claus in the movie?
Yes, I am.
Then you're watching the unrated cut.
Santa Claus as a toy that's that people are tripping to brownies while watching, or actual
no.
Santa Claus?
A suit that Mike brings over that he later is wearing in some ghostly possession way.
Well, I chose to watch the 3D version. I am really enjoying 3D home theater these days, so I wanted to watch this as it was intended, and I guess the 3D version was the theatrical cut. It was under 90 minutes, and that was my first time having under 90 minutes for a Paranormal Activity since, like, the first one.
Okay, yeah, you missed about 9 minutes of extended whatever, and then the Blu-ray also had about 9 more minutes of cut scenes that a lot of it just felt like completely superfluous, but one major scene with Santa Claus. Again, the decision seems to be, do we want to soil the name of Saint Nick by putting him in this movie?
Yeah, it should be said, did this come out in October? Because this is a Christmas movie.
It did, eventually. Again, 2 years late, October 2015. But yes, they decided not to run with the Christmas spirit and cut Santa from most everything. You do get to see that weird robot Santa after the guys, you know, get high, but that's about it.
And I want to just say to our listeners, I'm very sorry this is coming out after New Year's. We're recording this just before Christmas, and I couldn't think of a better Hallmark holiday movie to be reviewing yeah. with these guys than this. I'm in the Christmas spirit as of this recording, and so watching a holiday Paranormal Activity just felt right.
It sure did warm my heart. Arnie, why don't you give him the plot and we can get into this seasonal favorite.
The year is 2013 and we follow the Fleeg family. Father Ryan, mother Emily, and daughter Leela. It's Christmas time, so visiting the Fleegs in their new house is Ryan's brother Mike and Skyler. Who's Skyler?
I don't know. Wikipedia doesn't know. No one knows who Skyler is. I couldn't figure it out.
I think it might be Emily's yoga instructor.
I heard one line about a yoga retreat, so I think that she's just Emily's friend that over Christmas decides she's going to go yoga during the day.
Okay, because she gets called Auntie Skyler at one point, but I thought maybe that's just what they're calling her as a friend for their child.
But Skyler is staying at the house for a week, and Mike is staying at the house for 2 weeks.
I thought we were going to get a Mike-Skyler romance.
Oh, Mike tries. And one night, Skyler drinks some wine. I thought she was ready to get drunk enough to just give in. While decorating the house for Christmas, Mike finds a box with a very, very old VHS camcorder and a box of VHS tapes. Watching the tapes, they see videos of young Christy and Katie that were made in the late 80s, which we saw filmed during Paranormal Activity 3. But some of the videos happen in the early 90s, and we see the girls trained by their grandmother Lois to help the coming of Demon Toby. And it so happens Leela has an imaginary friend named Toby. Or is he imaginary? Using the ancient camcorder, Ryan and Mike start to see a strange floating apparition moving about the house. The spirit starts to become aggressive, blasting the residents of the house and becoming closer and closer with Leela. Through research and the tapes, Mike and Ryan discover that their new house was built on the lot where Katie and Christy used to live. Their house burned down and this new house was erected on the lot. Researching the strange symbols Leela was drawing on the walls, Mike finds out about a coven known as the Midwives. This is the coven shown on the tapes. And with the coven, in these 1992 tapes, is a boy named Hunter. Though the boy we know as Hunter wasn't born until 2005, yet they look identical. To fight off the spirit, Ryan and Emily call in a priest named Father Todd. The priest tells them that this demon is trying to abduct Leela so they can bring Toby into physical form. To stop this, they need to trap Toby with sheets doused in holy water. They set the Toby trap, but it doesn't work. The demon shakes off the sheets and kills Father Todd. Skyler vomits acid onto Mike and they both die. Ryan has a arm pop out of his chest and flings him somewhere, and I'm guessing he's dead? I don't know.
I mean, do you know many people that survived after getting an arm shoved through their chest?
Was it through his chest or coming out of his chest?
Oh, I thought it was going through it. You thought it was like a Venom scenario.
You saw the 3D.
It seemed like it was just coming out of his chest. I didn't see blood or anything popping open. I thought it was just... Plus, it was an apparition that he'd walked through many times earlier in the film. And Leela runs into a room where a large portal is opened above her bed. She enters the portal and is chased there by her mother. They emerge from the portal into 1992. Leela explains the midwives only needed a drop of the young girl's blood to bring Toby to life. Then we see the naked legs of Toby come in. Toby kills Emily and crushes the camera with his foot as credits roll.
And as they start, I guess it takes 5 writers to get something this wrong. But all you had to do was, like, go back and watch Paranormal Activity 3. And we know that the videographer Dennis died at Grandma Lois's house, right? That was in Moore Park.
Okay, I thought this was wrong. I was scratching my head here. I'm like, I think they missed something here. But it could have been me, because I don't really care about these movies. But it's them, right?
They didn't care either. They didn't go back and look. But yes, most of the movie in Paranormal Activity 3 is in Santa Rosa. And then they take a long car ride to Grandma's house in Moore Park. Yes.
But now they're back in Santa... They're saying Moore Park is Santa Rosa.
Correct.
Okay, I thought so.
They mislabel the house of Lois as being in Santa Rosa. It's in Moore Park.
Okay. All right. I didn't catch that, and...
I thought I did, but I didn't care to go put in the old movie and check.
Well, it tells you that if you thought that this was going to wrap everything up in a tight bow, and we would finally get all those answers I've been asking for, they're not even looking at the other movies. This is not the same writer of the other movies. They're doing whatever. Again... 2 sets of different writers plus somebody else credited on the story. Like, we know that this 2 years of post-production and what have you, this went through a lot of creative ideas, and there's probably an explanation as to who Skyler is and a whole backstory that just didn't make the cut because this thing was, yeah, something went wrong here. We all know it. This is probably the most unpopular entry in the whole saga. In fact, I remember hearing even worse than the box office was the critical and audience reaction.
Well, maybe this is a preview to my thoughts, but I was kind of surprised when I found that out after I watched this, that this was the most despised one. I'm like, huh, really? This is where people got mad?
That seems strange to me as well. Again, maybe the 3D fad was over. I know that from what I read, leading up to this, they said they were going to answer the questions fans wanted. People right. had been demanding to see Toby. You guys had been demanding to see Toby.
I did. I wanted it so much. Here it comes.
They said, you'll finally see Toby. You'll finally answer the questions we've been dragging out for 6 movies.
And by that, they mean that after we rewatched Dennis getting his back broken at the bottom of Grandma Lois's stairs, the little girls go upstairs and meet a teacher. And basically, he basically gives this long monologue about how Christie's going to birth the chosen one and Katie's going to go find very special people like Leela.
Which they said find special people, I thought they meant and break their neck.
Well, and at one point it's like, and there is another. If you remember that whole thing from Star Wars, like, yes, there's another girl out there. I'm like, I thought Toby cared about the boys. Like, why is this all about girls? Like, at some point I stopped caring about the mythology in this film because you have no other choice unless you want to get really upset and mad. But yeah, at the beginning here, I'm like, what is going on? Like, where is this mythology going? I thought it was Toby wants to be in a boy's body. You offer your oldest son and you get whatever from this demon.
That's what was implied.
Let's just ask the question, why isn't 5 considered canon? Like, the marked ones, for whatever reason, didn't get the numeral. They called it some kind of spinoff. But in fact, it answered more questions than this movie does. And yeah, this thing goes off about, like, a special girl that was born on the same day as Hunter or something. And that doesn't really explain anything.
No, it goes away from the, we're building an army of demon people.
Yeah, it disputes what had been given before in the last movie and doesn't give anything better in its place.
I feel like I know why they're keeping these films around the same year now, because they got to do that June 6, 2006 birth date for 666.
No. It's June 6th, 2005. They're counting 2000 as year one.
Yes, that's the 6 year. I was so confused when they first said that.
And then
I counted it out. I'm like, I guess that counts as the 6 year, but it's weird. Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Okay. Yeah, I was very confused why they were saying 666 in 2005. Okay.
It may be the 6th year that starts with a 2, but it's neither the 6th year of the 21st century nor the 6th year of a decade, because only in programming do you start counting 0. But okay, if that's how they want to spin it, I think what happened is they went back and looked at the year Hunter was born and like, oh man, if we'd only made it 1 year later, but okay.
Yeah, I can't believe they didn't do that. That's, wow.
They can't. Let's just go back to what we know, and that is some chump bought a camera and filmed in 2006. And if there were babies that were born before all of that, there's nothing they can do. This is like married to what happened on that indie shoot way back with the first film. And yes, if they had written all of this out, if this had been the brainchild of a Hollywood think tank, then they would have worked all of this out ahead of time. But they're trapped saying that, well, kids had to be born before September 2006. Well, that just means they missed their cool year. And this one, you'll notice as we jump to the quote-unquote present, again, people watching this in 2015 might be wondering, why are we focused on November 29th, 2013? That was when they were hoping this movie would come out.
That explains it. I thought maybe it was going to try to tie into the other movies with the timelines again. Maybe it would tie into the marked ones, something like that.
It doesn't even tie into Paranormal 3. Again, they got Moorpark wrong. Like, this is what I'm saying. They're not tying anything together. It's all unraveling. And that's why people are mad. We were promised answers. We get confusion.
I liked this opening. I liked the fact that we were back at part 3 and then continuing with it, seeing this guy who I momentarily thought might be the priest from part 1 or the psychic from part 1. I was like, did they finally bring that guy back? But no, it's somebody else.
Yeah, this is just someone new, right? We've never seen this guy before.
He's credited as Kent, but when the brothers watch the footage, they call him Ponytail. But yes, he is their new teacher. He is the one instructing them in the ways of, well, we'll find out that Christy has psychic hunting powers, and he will help her be able to look into the future and imagine, you know, rooms in this house. I thought this was the same house, and maybe it is. But we're going to find out that the establishment that this new family is living in is built upon a house that burned down in 1992.
Oh, no, this house is totally different. This is a huge house. Like, the layout to this place is crazy.
I wondered if it was the same house, because every so often there were shots, or I wondered if it was supposed to be the same house and filmed differently, because the way the kitchen flowed into the living room and things, the staircase, I'm like, is it the same house? But no, it's a new house built on the lot.
But the columns, remember, that was the big thing, was that in two movies, they've gone and followed these columns to a back coach house kind of thing. And you'll either see the coven back there or a mannequin head. It's a very similar layout. Let's just put it that way. But yes, I didn't remember all of the second floor banisters and what have you. It looks like they got more money to pimp this place out. And it's Christmas time. So yes, we are definitely seeing a new dimension in the fact that there are going to be Christmas trees and Santa is coming. Santa, again, I don't know why they back away from it, but they try to tie the idea that Santa Claus coming is the same thing as Toby coming. There are even cut scenes that bring that connection closer.
Does this movie not end, like, on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day? Because I felt like that's what it was building up to. I'm like, this is going to be a really perverse, you know, Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Right.
We're going to turn Christmas into a horror thing.
Were they afraid of that? Were they thinking about what happened in 1984 when Silent Night, Deadly Night got Christian protest? And did they think that that was going to be a money loser if they turned Santa Claus into a demon? I think you'd want to do that.
I thought that's where this was going.
That's not really that sacrilegious in 2013, no. 2015. I feel like many horror movies by this point have played upon that imagery. And yeah, you should go for that. The fact that we never end up on Christmas and they kind of throw away much of those ideas just speaks to the terrible creative process that's going on behind the scenes.
I'm not going to say the creativity here is terrible. I do think that the Christmas thing could have been exploited a little bit more. It's a weird setting to not play into. Unlike Die Hard, I'm not going to be caught claiming Paranormal Activity, the Ghost Dimension, is a Christmas movie.
Because you don't want to admit to having seen it?
And again, it's not, particularly if you only watch the rated cut. And if you watch the unrated cut, you will see Uncle Mike coming in, bringing in a very creepy looking Santa mask and, you know, red suit. And we'll try it on in one scene of that movie. And in a deleted scene, there'll be a demon in it as well.
I guess in that unrated cut, yeah, there's a ghost or something. Or demons, there are no ghosts in this franchise, but wearing that suit and disappears. And I'm like, okay, that's building up. We're going to have like murderous Santa. Come down the chimney, because there's so much chimney stuff in this too.
Again, I think that they blanched. I think when you look at the fact that there are five writers on this, one of those writers said, yes, that's what we're going to do. And then somebody somewhere said no. That's what I mean about a terrible creative process. Not saying that this movie's terrible or not yet. I'm just saying, obviously, there is big fights about what story they're telling here.
How much of a fight do you think it was to get to the central gimmick of this film? Like, Mike and Ryan, they're putting up Christmas lights, and they happen to find this box full of VHS tapes and I thought it was supposed to be the camcorder from part three, but...
It is.
I don't know. It's modded out. Did they mod it out for part three, or did this happen magically sometime later? Because it's modded out to film Ghost.
I can't speak to why it was modded out, but we do know that this is... The reason why they included that opening kill of Dennis... Why they didn't just show us the girls getting trained is because they wanted to remind us he was a wedding photographer and that all the stuff in 1988 was done by this camera. And now this camera is magical. Yes, because it went through those experiences, I believe. It's been touched by a demon and can now...
The demon modded it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally modded. Like, Skylar is going to know a lot about these spiritual cameras. I guess she's into yoga. I can see the connection. But, like, she's the one that points out, like, oh, yeah, this is to capture ghosts. And, like, there's extra lenses or something inside of it.
What I love about this is he finds a retro camera and is geeking out about, oh, my God, how retro it is, which I would also do.
Mm-hmm.
But then he decides, let me take the side off of this. Look at the focus rings. I'm looking up schematics online, and it's supposed to have three tubes, but it has six. I'm like, okay, who does that?
I love that it's this stupid, like, because I feel like 3D is where we want to get. I want to see inside of this ghost slash demon dimension. Yes, these are places I want to be by a part six. So, yeah, okay, we found a spiritual camera. Okay, cool. I'm totally fine with it.
Yeah, and I would say that watching it not in 3D in any of the two versions that I watched, it's still awfully trippy.
Yeah, no, I liked it.
I felt like really off kilter whenever they cut to this ghost camera. And I wondered, Arnie, I know you're saying it wasn't much, but when you were watching the wisps of black ooze floating around like flotsam in the air, did it look cool?
Yes, that was the good 3D stuff. It was coming out at me, and it had distance behind it and in front of it. So that was kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously this is the calling card of this movie. The gimmick that they decided to retain is we're going to have a camera that can capture paranormal activity like we've never seen it before.
Because we've never seen it before. Now we can see it.
Yeah, this is industrial light and magic coming in with computer effects, giving us wispy spirits in the air.
But we have seen it before. We've seen it thanks to an Xbox. Now we're just getting to see it almost like a magic eye type thing where it's sort of there, it's sort of not there.
That Xbox didn't show us nothing. It showed us a shadow of a boy walking around one time. This thing, we're going to see ooze flying all over the place in this film.
And I think, again, by part six, you have to take these kinds of creative risks of, like, we've talked about. Arnie, you've been mostly on the side of keep it lo-fi. Don't try to bring in special effects. But I think we do need to see some of this stuff. And it could look worse. I'll just say, for the most part, I feel like these ghostly, trippy spirit photography moments are somewhat appealing.
Yeah, like we'll see what I'm assuming is Toby, and it's just like this oil that looks like it's dripping upwards. It's not like mind-blowing effects, but I've been begging for this since part one. Like, show us something, please. And like, they're gonna get to it, and it's fine. It works for what this is.
I like that at this point they haven't tried to make it like a demon form or a human form or anything. It's floating stuff, kind of like those little flotsams you get in front of your eyes after you rub your eye really hard. So I'm okay with that. I was always afraid that if they created... Remember, he's supposed to have cloven hooves, according to the flower put in the first one.
Oh, I'm glad we don't have that.
So if we had some cloven hooded horned thing, even if it looks as good as Tim Curry from Legend, and it wouldn't, then it would be silly. So here, the way they've chosen to do it, I actually really like.
Sort of. Yeah, I agree with you. They're trying to still retain the idea of ambiguity, you know, in the same way that we look into the dark in those earlier movies and go, is something moving? We look at this particulate in the air and go, is something wrong with my eyes or is there something going on? But pretty quickly, it does turn into like oozing tentacles and stuff. I do feel like it takes a corporeal form by the 25-minute mark.
And looking at that, yeah, you still only see the black stuff through the camera, but that started reminding me of The Grudge with all the black ooze type stuff, especially when somebody vomits it later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unsettling. I think that's something you want to tap into. I've never been unsettled by a paranormal activity. This at least tries to do that.
What do we think of the family? I mean, I know that they've never really been... The characters have always been problematic, right? Like, I've only really liked it when they focused on little Christy and Katie. I don't feel like the victims have ever been that appealing.
As far as this family goes, I like Layla, the little girl. She taps into those Katie and Christy vibes from part three. So I like that they've turned that focus. They've never been able to get the male counterpart. Like, when they try to go Damien, that has not worked for me. But when they go with Carol Ann, like, I feel like the series could get that more or less right. And I like Uncle Mike because he's comedy relief. Like, he's a funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
I like the family well enough. I'll be honest, when this movie started and we were in part three and then building right off of that, I was really excited. And I wanted to stay with Grandma Lois and Katie and Christy. And when we got to this whole brand new family again, listen, we've watched 6 Paranormal Activity movies in 7 weeks. I'm getting kind of tired of the conventions. I'm really getting tired of watching found footage movies where people are recording for no given reason. I'm tired of a new family again having to learn what we know, having gone through this for 6 movies. So I kind of gave a big sigh when I saw that it was a new family again, but they're not bad, really. I kind of like all 4 adults, and the little girl does pretty well. I think they're kind of ill-defined. Again, who is Skyler? And Uncle Mike and the father, Ryan, are pretty interchangeable. I mean, I know one's actually the father of Leela, but I don't see a whole lot of differentiation between their personalities. But I like this family well enough. It helps a lot that this movie is going to move faster than any of them before it. So they're going to learn what we know pretty quick.
Well, if you watch the rated cut. I do feel like there's a lot of extra in an unrated cut. A lot of that 9 minutes is here, again, with all the Santa Claus set up and what have you. There's a scene with Mom talking to Layla about how she almost died giving birth to her because the umbilical cord wrapped around her throat and chandelier shaking. It takes a while. I'm not going to say it feels like it comes quick, but maybe if you watch that 89-minute cut, you're okay.
I paused it at about the 30-minute mark where they'd gotten about as far as most of the movies do. And I'm like, yes, we have an hour of new things to happen.
I mean, night one doesn't come for quite some time. They are going to keep that convention. The thing is, they have to set up that the family believes there is something paranormal going on to record. And so, like, what is the thing that convinces them? I mean, yes, the daughter is talking to an imaginary friend. And if you watch the extended cut, she bites someone at school because of them.
Oh, there are other children? I really thought Leela was lacking in friends her own age.
Well, you never see those kids she bites. It's just referenced.
Yeah, they get a call from school. It's mostly the same cast. There's no missing characters in the unrated cut. You won't see much else, but you'll hear about more. Skyler, you know, the thing is, I've been waiting for the blonde. Remember the tease of the marked one was it ended with some mysterious...
Yes, you were so sure that blonde meant something.
Yeah, she turned off the camera and she was there screaming behind bars. And again, I thought they were telling me that she was going to be the character that continued on. So I was looking at Skyler as the spy. She was working for the coven. She's a midwife. I actually thought she was an au pair the first time I watched it. I thought she was there to watch over the kid. So I thought she kind of had that vibe and like the omen of yeah. The nanny who was really going to make sure Satan got what he wanted out of the kid.
And I completely forgot about that blonde who turned off the camera and never thought that once. I kind of thought Skyler was there maybe to hook up with Mike.
Well, certainly that is, you know, Mike, again, I think you're right. He's probably the most likable adult in any Paranormal Activity, and it's mostly because he's in a different kind of movie. Like, he's the funny guy in a romantic comedy that's just been dumped, and we want to see him pull it together. It's at Christmas, and he's alone, so wouldn't you know it, this hot blonde is, you know, studying yoga in the bedroom right next to mine. I got to make that happen.
Yeah, it's even mentioned his girlfriend broke up with him because she didn't want kids, and that's what ruined the relationship.
That's what he says, but...
He's lying, yeah.
Yeah, we found out earlier that she dumped him.
Okay. I thought that was going to set something up, like he was going to help birth in the new Toby, or the body for the new Toby or something.
But it did make me think, like Stuart did, that she was the nanny, and that she must love kids because she's a nanny, and that's why he's going on and on about wanting kids.
Yeah, he ends up breaking out some, quote, fine Belgian chocolate, clearly laced with pots, and his brother and him start watching these videos. And this is where we start to get to the ideas. Well, it's a reminder. If you've wanted to forget maybe the last two movies, and it's been a long time since Paranormal Activity 3. They do a kind of greatest hits, and when you see the girls, you know, back at the birthday party, back during the earthquake and what have you. And then the brothers are hoping to see a porno, but really what they wind up seeing is that this Kent guy is teaching them how to visualize the things that are in their house.
Yeah, they see the videotape, the daughter sneezes, and I think it's Katie on the tape says, bless you.
Christy.
Okay, Christy, I get them confused.
Here's why you're confused, is because obviously these girls have had a growth spurt, and they are hiding how old the Katie looks, and they're just focusing on the one that still looks like a child.
I love that they ask about then the older one. Is she taking minutes? Because she's just in the background writing something down.
And sitting down, because they don't want to show how tall she's become.
And it felt like this is always about Katie. Like, she's the one that takes that baby in part two. Mm-hmm. But, like, no, it's all about Christy when they were kids.
Yeah.
But I do, like, I'm intrigued by this time travel stuff. Like, we got hints of it at the end of part five, and I don't know what it all means. But, yeah, the fact that they're predicting when they're going to sneeze or they're able to describe Layla's room, like, it does keep me interested. This feels like they're trying to tell a story. Whether they get there, we'll have that debate at the end. But thus far, I'm kind of into this one. Like, not because I'm scared, but just because of the storytelling in it.
Agreed. This is the least scary of the films to me, but yet it's the one that feels like it has the most story, so I'm actually able to be interested in what's happening.
I will agree with half of that. This is the least scary one. The most story? Like, by that, I take to mean you mean the mythology, understanding what the coven wants and what's going on?
They're planting a lot of seeds that maybe they'll answer later about, like, this time travel stuff. Like, before, I always felt like the plot was, oh, there's something in the house, we'll start recording, and we hear bangs and knocks for the next 90 minutes, and then it kind of ends with someone dying. Like, here, it feels like they're setting things up in the first act to pay off in the third act.
Yes, what they're setting up is the idea Christy and Katie in the 80s know that one day a house will be built on the one that they live in that burns to the ground in 92, and that makes the child inside special. And I think the problem I'm having with that is we were already told about this special other child in part four, and, like, he ended up not being that special. Like, focus on what you got. Katie and Christy were the ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, and they were collecting an army of firstborn males, according to part five, the marked ones. So now that they're working in that, like, a girl was born on the same day as Hunter, these tenuous connections are feeling meaningless at this point. I don't feel like Layla is very special at all.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with that. Like, I always thought this was about Hunter. It was about that male baby. That is what Toby wanted. And why are we spending so much time with Christy and Katie? I don't know, but sometimes it works in these films. But yeah, I do feel like instead of wrapping things up or tightening, they're just adding more. They're loosening it all. And that is somewhat confusing. Like, you have enough plot points that people want wrapped up. Focus on those.
Agreed. Hunter's done wrong in this series. Assuming this is the end and part seven doesn't turn out to be the story of Hunter, there was so much about Hunter and where is Hunter and where did he go and all of this. And part four was all about which child even is Hunter, and is Hunter the special one or is it this other kid who's the special one? And now it's Leela?
Yeah, I'm feeling like ever since four, we're seeing these other families, and they're not really tied well enough into the main storyline to feel like they matter. Like, I want to wrap up, you promised me, Toby, Christy, Katie, wrap that up. Don't try to keep expanding into new children. Like, we don't need to go there. But they do. And again, I think some of this is just to remind people if it has been, in fact, well, you know, 3 years can be an eternity. It's been a while since they saw part three. Let's do the Bloody Mary thing, only it's backwards. And I don't know. To me, there feels like there's a lot of, like, meaningless stuff here at the beginning. I know some of that's extended cut, but it's a long time before they suddenly realize the dad is happy to take his ghost camera and say, we're going to just try to capture this oozy shape that is sometimes appearing in the ceiling.
Every movie we've reviewed, I've said, man, I wish I watched the shorter cut. This time I did, and so I did not feel that lag. I was really happy with the pacing on this one. So I think extended cuts are just bad for this series, period. Although it was the last one where without the extended cut, you'd have no idea what's going on.
And you guys like the third movie extended as well.
Yeah, some of my favorite scenes, I guess, were cut out of the theatrical. So I'd say watch the extended there. But with this one, yeah, I wish it was tighter. I wish I was watching that theatrical cut. But you know what? I'm getting to see oozy tentacles along the ceiling or whatever those things are. And so I'm more or less satisfied that I'm just getting to see the paranormal activity this time, that I'm in this ghost dimension.
And only the one camera captures it. They make that clear in night one that Skylar enters and she just feels a chill. But when you cut to that 1988 camera, there's all this black ooze that's going to buzz her head, and you know, maybe when they freeze frame it later, they see ghost faces and what have you,
making you wonder, why do they even bother setting up other cameras?
Just get out of the house after that. Like, once you review that footage, don't stick around.
Yeah, that is the thing. Like, we never see them actually watching the footage of the tentacles, but if you actually saw that moving around your house, would that not get you out, like, immediately?
Yeah, I would get out.
Or would I investigate further?
At the very least, you would move your child.
Yes, okay, I'll agree with move the child.
Well, yeah, you might investigate further, but you definitely get your wife and child out of there.
Yes, I agree with that.
I get a lawyer on the phone so we could sell that this to some reality show, some network television thing.
Now, to talk about the VHS bit a little bit, were you guys annoyed by the scan lines, or was that maybe made worse by the fact that I was wearing 3D glasses? But the fact that they interlace the screen, and so they don't drop the res like if you're actually watching a VHS, but instead they put black lines throughout the entire VHS video.
Yeah, I liked all the scan lines. I liked whenever they cut to that, like, you feel like you're on this old VHS. I don't know. This franchise is a gimmick, and this may be the most gimmicky, and so I just go with it. It's fun that it looks different than the previous ones.
Yeah, I liked it okay. I mean, it was helpful to know which camera was which. That was the way to know.
I thought it was a little too much, and I also thought that they did a little bit too much with the artifacting on it. They didn't make VHS artifacts. It felt like they were actually putting digital blocks in there or something.
I mean, I think that's how many people think of old videotapes looking, like that kind of blocky artifacting. Again, Arnie, I think you're probably right to be citing that this is not an accurate representation of what a video camera would make in the 80s. But keep in mind, for a young audience that is never going to go watch that footage, 2015, they get it.
And also remember, this is a highly modified special camera that captures spirit, so its artifacting may be different than a regular camcorder.
My problem isn't only that it's not factually true, my problem is it's distracting me in the video. I think the interlacing of lines was a little too much.
Oh, and see, and I really appreciated that. Maybe I would have felt different if I had a seat in 3D, though.
That's what I'm guessing as well. But I'm also feeling like, oh, these are the things that we're going to get. Like, they don't feel like we're learning anything new at all. It's Leela, like, getting her mom's Bible and trying to burn pages of it in the fireplace, and angels falling off the top of the tree. Like, this feels like that slow burn kind of Paranormal Activity 1 or 2, where we're not learning a whole lot. I'm having the opposite reaction of you, Arnie. I'm not feeling like this is fleet and fun and yay, they're getting to it. I'm feeling like, oh, I'm not getting any of the answers that I was promised, and this thing is dragging.
I do halfway agree with you, Stuart, that yes, I'm shocked that they're just going to go and do all these old tricks again. Yeah. Like, why do the slow burn? Just like, amp it up right away. Like, we're seeing an oil slick ghost form in the girl's bedroom. Like, let's just go for it. Let's go crazy. It's part 6. This is supposed to give us the answers.
It abducts her to the ghost dimension.
Yeah.
By act 2, she has disappeared into that hole in the wall, and we're paying attention to the fact that there's a portal to another universe. Like, that should be the hook of the whole movie.
Agree.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I thought it would be, but I also was afraid, what would they show on the other side? Would it be cheesy?
No, that's a valid fear. $10 million budget. It's not going to be great, but it's what they promised, right? It's, if you look at the poster, it's that child staring at the hole in her wall and that long passage into something, the other side. We want to go there. We want to spend time on that, and we don't. We spend a lot of time with people reviewing footage from 1988. And if you do get the Blu-ray, you can actually see a lot of these Katie scenes and Christie scenes in full. So if that's something you wanted, I think the reason they're not in the finished film is because these girls have obviously aged to now late teenage years, and they're just not little girls anymore.
I was doing the math a lot on their age. I mean, I know that they jumped ahead a few years to cover that these girls are obviously adolescents now and not little girls, but I keep thinking that they would come into the present, and then I'm like, wait, Katie's around somewhere, right? And I kept expecting Katie to show up at this house looking for Leela.
And maybe if she is here, because sometimes the shadow kind of looks like her. Sometimes it looks like Santa Claus. Sometimes it just looks like tentacles. I feel like that nothing these writers are doing is really tying in to what I saw before, other than just copying the beats.
Well, she may have a day job, but Katie Featherstone was not too busy with other acting jobs to come back, so I'm guessing they didn't ask her.
Well, yes, the character is obviously referenced once these people start looking into the paranormal activity. Once they have one really bad night where their daughter is playing on a recorder, looking out the window and saying, "Toby's coming for me." And again, the black smoke like buzzes the mom or something. They start calling priests. They start calling their old realtor. And yes, Katie Hubbard is the one that sold them this house. And the real estate agency has no idea who that is.
Yeah, I took it that that was Katie from the other films. Like, I don't remember if Hubbard was her last name, but I assume that was her under some alias.
Yeah, she obviously made that up to sell them this house because she wanted this particular family because, I don't know, this child is so special.
How'd she get a realtor's license after murder? Like,
like, does it just have to be a child that was born on the same day as Hunter?
666.
They make the idea that, like, they need two children's blood to bring some prince of hell here. Some, like, again, it's a really shitty explanation.
Yeah, which goes against everything they've told us. Like, you just need a male for that Toby to be born into. Now you got to get, like, blood and time travel. What? Where did all this come from?
It came from different writers that had different arguing ideas that ended up being this messy storyline. But there, we also see another outsider. This is the one other character here. It takes Emily a while. She's crazily calling churches and saying, "We're haunted. Can you send Father so-and-so over here?" And eventually Father Todd answers the call.
Seems very casual. He's like in jeans at one point. Like,
it's the new hip Catholic church.
Okay, is that what it is?
He gets to give all the lines that we already know from all Insidious movies and every other movie it feels like from this decade of, demons will follow you if you leave the house. They grow larger on your fear. Like, again, there's a scant amount of new information being given. These are old lines, old cliches. He tries to put some holy water on her and her teddy bear, and she ends up smiling and taking a bite out of him.
And he continues to try to help. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, you could do one of two things. You could say, "I've been bitten and I want to get out of here," or "I'm going to be the star of the Exorcist, you know, new movie concept, and I'm just going to ride this fame," and maybe he wants to help. I don't know.
Not an exorcism. He's doing a cleansing.
Yeah, an extermination. But that is night 8, and we're only at night 6. There's some other kind of dull nights to talk about. I don't know. Again, is there anything that happens in the house until the end that really grabs you, 3D or otherwise?
When they would walk into the blob and they talk about how it sounds underwater, that looked really cool in 3D. The black tentacles looked really cool in 3D.
That was early on, though.
Yeah. Night 6, night 7 is more of the same. I'm kind of like, all right, let's move on with it. I'll give kudos to this little girl actress, though. She does very well of playing obstinate and telling her mom, "No, I don't want to come downstairs. I'm fine here."
Yeah, the scene that I really wanted that would have happened, I guess, on night six, I guess Mike and Ryan didn't take a camera with them, is when they go to the police. Like, we're going to go to the police, tell them what's going on. Like, what are you going to tell the police? I want that footage. I want to know what they said, because it obviously didn't do very much good. Like, no police are going to come back.
I mean, that was only in the unrated cut.
Shorter
cut, they have some of the same footage, but they lay different dialogue over them, so they're saying different things. But yes, what sends them to the police only in the unrated cut is that they watch footage of Dennis dying. And they're like, this is someone that, like, we can, you know, they see him break his back and all of that. And they're like, this is something that the cops can investigate. That's what they bring to the cops. But you won't see that in the shorter cut. And while they're doing that, Emily has some stuff with the black shape slamming doors in her or whatever. But they come back with a Hunter Ray wanted poster. And they also have Hunter on footage from 1992. The poster says he was born in 2005, but here he is alive, you know, participating in some kind of time-traveling ritual a decade and a half before. Katie stole him away. She killed Christy. And maybe some family in Nevada. I'm like, I love the fact that they're just trying to tie Paranormal 4 in somehow. There might have been, like, some other family that doesn't really have anything to do with anything, but Katie killed them, maybe.
How do they know that? Oh, well.
Yeah, exactly. We can all, again, I think this series was right to say, let's forget part 4. Maybe you even do want to forget part 5. I don't. I think it's the best one. But maybe it was taking it in a direction you didn't want to go. But I think that means you're obligated to give us something better. And I'm not feeling that. I'm feeling like this movie is way more sluggish than marked ones. And it would have helped to have Killer Santa Claus. I do feel like when we have these extended scenes of, like, Layla looking up the chimney and saying he's coming and all of that. And there's a moment, I think it's only a deleted scene, but the Skylar character gets really freaked out by the Santa Claus coming for her, like grabbing, like doing ghostly things. He never actually attacks her, but, like, you know, she's standing there and Santa's behind her and then, you know, whoosh, she gets buzzed in the head. She ends up getting a knife. I think the reason why she leaves in the unrated cut is she gets a knife and, like, tries to go at the child with it.
Okay, she just disappears in the cut I saw, and I did remember them saying that she was only going to be there for a week, and I'm like, did the week end, and they just didn't show her leave? She just gone, and then she just pops back up again.
No, they came home to find her, like, holding a giant knife coming at their little daughter, and decided, maybe you should stay at the yoga place.
And then they let her back in again later?
Yeah, exactly. Again, and I've noticed this about a lot of these movies, is, like, they have conflicting ideas. They're really not tight storylines. They're doing things based on what will look cool and the best footage stays. And if it contradicts a little, we might have to throw one or two scenes out. But by and large, what we include is not what's best for the story, but what's best for the jump scares.
And I definitely feel that probably applies most to this one because, yeah, I'm frustrated trying to figure out what is the story here, what is the lore going on that they're trying to expand on or retcon or whatnot. But, yeah, I'm getting some good visuals every once in a while, which are holding me over.
It helps a little, but, I mean, at a certain point, there's only so many scenes of the black ooze, like, hitting somebody in the back of the head, knocking them over, that you're like, really? That's all it's going to do?
Really, is that all you're going to do applies to every Paranormal Activity film? Yes. This one's at least giving me black ooze.
So night 7, we're finally getting there. Like, there's a crack in the, you know, some runes that they somehow know. The dad has been really good about his internet searches, and somehow he knows since night 2 that his daughter has symbols in a doorway shape above her bed.
Yeah, why did they scrub those off? Get a magic eraser and scrub those off. I couldn't believe they left them on there.
He knows that it's about time travel. Like, he knows all of this stuff. And so, like, yeah, who's surprised when all of a sudden in the middle of the night, we see the wall burst open, the daughter disappear down that hallway, and for a moment they think she's gone, and then they find her again in that bed, grinning. I do think you're right. We needed this to end on Christmas. We needed to believe that when she's talking about he's coming and looking up the chimney, they think she's thinking about Santa,
yes!
But she's actually expecting Toby.
That seems so obvious, like this was heading right towards Christmas Day.
Yeah. Agreed. And I don't know that you need this Father Todd stuff. I mean, it feels kind of lazy that we have this character blowing in to give them all the answers right at the end, like soak some sheets in some holy water and draw some pentagrams on the floor, and all of a sudden this CGI bird creature won't be able to do anything.
I was excited, though, that they seem to have a way to defeat Toby, although the method's a little bit suspect to me when they say, soak the sheets in water, then catch them on fire.
Holy water, not just water, holy water. Like, I don't know, maybe you could bless a whole bathtub full of water and make it holy just right there, but I just imagine, like, little vials of holy water you had to bring over from the church.
No, you can bless an entire swimming pool if you want.
I don't know how it works.
At least in the vampire movies I watch, I've seen bathtubs blessed and everything.
Catholics may do it different. That's all I'm saying.
I want to see you call a priest over to bless your bathwater.
But I wonder how you set wet sheets on fire.
I don't know. It's holy water. It starts on fire, too. Like in Castlevania, when you threw that holy water, it started, made a little flame when it landed.
That's true. It was grenades.
Yes.
Now, there's two endings to this. And in both the unrated and the theatrical cut, and the 3D cut, it seems, which is the theatrical, you're going to get the big ending, the one where this demon creature doesn't get defeated by wet sheets. Bud keeps going, and blink and you miss it. But like after watching it the first time, I was like, what happened to Skylar and Mike? Skylar, like, gets the black-eyed kind of look and, like, veins running down her neck, and all of a sudden vomits acid or something and melts Mike.
Yeah, she has acid puke.
Yeah.
That's new to the saga.
Yeah, and I think new to the production, like done maybe at the last minute just to say, okay, I guess this is how we're writing these characters out of here. And yeah, Ryan goes running after his daughter upstairs. And I think what we're to presume is the bird creature followed him, drove his claw through him, and yanked him back. Because that's the classic move, right? Paranormal Activity, that first movie's ending where someone gets thrown at the screen. This is the reverse of that. Someone gets pulled back out of the film. It's a callback.
Yeah, that's what I took it as, is now that we've got this old magic VHS camera, and might I just say that it hurts me that VHS is now such ancient technology it can see ghosts. But
right.
But now that we have the special ancient camera, we can see what happened to everybody else. I presume that this arm went through everybody and flung them throughout all the movies as we've seen people flung.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I just thought Katie was tossing them towards the camera and all of them.
It's Katie doing most of that work. And again, this movie feels so detached. The fact that there is a bird creature, that's Toby. Again, I couldn't connect the mythology of what I've been seeing the last five movies with what's happening in this house.
I'm pretty sure the bird creature is Toby, right?
No, Toby's got to be born.
No, Toby's going to take a human form.
Like that black ooze at one point was a giant Katie standing behind Mike. So again, I don't think they have really clear ideas. It's about as clear as this murky thing floating around what they're doing here. It can be whatever they want it to be.
Yeah, I thought this was Toby in spirit form. We were finally seeing Toby. I didn't think bird. I just thought big black demon shape. Then, yeah, Leela goes into this portal, which I know Poltergeist is a much better movie, but this is a cooler looking portal than Carol Ann's Closet. I was very excited to see what was on the other side of that portal.
1992 is.
That was disappointing.
Yeah. And they had done that before. They did that in part 5. Remember, he went through something and Hector wound up in Katie's house from the original. If you're going to do that, then I just feel like you need to tie into something significant from part 3. But what they do is they go back to their old Santa Rosa house, not the Moorpark grandma house, but the Santa Rosa house where the sheet was like the ghost that snuck up in the babysitter. And I don't know. They just don't do anything with the location.
Oh, I totally agree. Like, I think it's a cool looking portal that they make in that wall. Like, but once you go in there, yeah, you're just in a location you've been to. It's a missed opportunity. And is the house, because I keep thinking they're going to 1992. I believe that's where they go at the end, but the house has not burned down yet at this point. I thought that burned down in 88.
This is not that house. Moore Park is the house that burned down in 1992.
Moore Park is that?
Yes, that's Grandma's house.
No, it was Katie and Christie's. When they say their house burned
down. Oh, wait, no, you might be right.
No, Jacob's right on this.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I wasn't connecting it to the house that fire that they've talked about in so many movies.
They made that such a big deal and we've never seen it.
Okay. Again, I'm really struggling to connect this movie with the other movies, but you are correct. They have talked about their childhood home burning down.
Yes.
So I guess that's what they were referring to. But I just want to, just to add confusion to all of this, the place that they're living in, the house that they're, the grounds that they're on now are on Grandma's house. Or at least they modeled it to look exactly like Grandma's house.
Okay. When they go to 1992, they're at Grandma's house.
Right.
That's what I said in the plot summary, and you said, no, that wasn't Lois's house.
Well, because I'm struggling to understand here, but the childhood house that burned down is in Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
Yes.
They've mixed up the houses. They don't understand.
Whatever. If they don't care, I don't care. Moving on, the thing I cared about was seeing Toby. And when I see some bare-ass feet.
Not even cloven feet?
Mm-mm. Yeah, fuck this.
Well, yeah, the disappointment isn't that they're like human. It's just that I thought we've already seen Toby. I thought that was Hunter, that he would grow up and his eyes would flash red, and now it's Toby the demon. Like, I didn't know we were waiting for some big full body reveal.
I also think when you come back and you see Leela and she's just fine and they're and she's normal again. She no longer has black ooze eyes and she's like, it's okay, mommy. They just needed a drop of my blood. You teleported a woman through time and space for one drop of blood?
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, I don't understand that either.
That seems like a lot of work for a very small drop of blood. I think you need some human sacrifice. The children need to be in danger.
I agree with you. And the thing that I heard them say when we have a scene where Mike and Skylar go back and rummage through some of the data dumps that Ryan had downloaded, what I heard them say was, this is all for one of seven princes. So it's not even like this is like the main thing. This is like they could keep doing this with like new families. There had to be some franchise idea that like
Toby's just one of the seven princes. We're gonna have six movies for each prince, and then like this is a real MCU situation, and then they'd have their end game with, you know, raising the actual devil. Yes, the rich franchise here with lots of lore to delve into.
Yeah, ugh, no, that's wrong. And I think this, I don't know what the real ending was, but they do have an alternate. If you get the Blu-ray, you can watch ending number two. It's not the one that plays in the cut. That if you just put the disc in and hit play, you're not going to see this ending. You have to go make a request. But they had some idea that this wasn't the right ending. This is even worse in my mind. We see that that creature, we'll call it Toby, got vanquished. That when they threw the hot towel on it, it did die. And then we cut 4 months later, the family is moving into a new house. And out of one of the moving boxes falls a Katie and Christie video. And suddenly they're standing there next to their daughter. And then it gets really weird. We just have a jump cut to where they're now filming Leela's new birthday party. Mom is pregnant. And the little girl wishes, as she blows out the candle, that she has a baby brother. And I think Kent, the teacher from the beginning, no longer wearing a ponytail because it isn't 1992 anymore, comes in and, like, poses for a family photo. That's how they originally were going to end us.
That is not a good ending. I like the ending I saw a lot better than that ending.
Yeah. I don't think I liked any of the endings, but you at least have to go into the portal, and you do have to show us Toby. I'd argue you need to show us a different Toby.
I'm just worried that, like, Toby, unless he's got a loincloth or something, he's, like, just standing there dangling in front of a little girl. Like, it's bizarre.
This couldn't have been the ending. Again, if anything, it was the beginning of all the different princes that we can create. And the flop of the box office made them go, nope, this is all it. All questions are answered. Good night. Goodbye. Turn off the lights.
Well, before we turn off the lights, Jacob, Stewart, do you recommend a trip into the ghost dimension? Jacob.
Yeah, I don't know what everyone's all upset about with this one. It's unlike most of the Paranormal Activity films. I actually got to see something. Like, I got to see Paranormal Activity happening, just not footsteps or a door slightly ajar. I like the gimmick of the camera. And so, like, maybe this is the one for people that just can't stand this franchise. This feels like the best of the carnival rides that... Like, it's got 3D, it's got actual images to see, but as, again, we're considering this stuff cinema, the actual movies, my problem is probably the middle of this film. You're right, Stuart, like, they introduce all this new stuff, and then the middle of this film comes along, and, oh no, we're just gonna do the stuff we've done before. Like, maybe they got scared with the marked ones, like, mm-hmm. We try to go off formula, yeah. And we got penalized for that, so yep. Let's go back to night one, night two. And that is the frustration for me. I don't even care, like, how weird the ending is. Like, it doesn't answer anything. Like, if I was scared in the middle of this, or not scared, that's sorry. I've never been scared in these. But if I could find something more entertaining, if they could have done something with the ooze, something with Santa Claus, something more than just retreading what they've done for five films, more or less, I think I could have, as unpredictable as I thought it would be, like, half of these films would get a recommend from me, like, which sounds crazy saying that, especially from where I started. But yeah, it's just too much of a slog in the middle of this. And if you're hardcore into the mythology here, I guess this is going to upset you. I don't care about it. It's kind of a fun haunted house, but gets boring in the middle. So it's maybe that is a recommend for Paranormal Activity, but I'm going to give it a weak not recommend.
Stuart.
Yeah, I think what I heard you say, Jacob, is I like the visual trick of the ghost camera.
Yes.
And I'll agree with that. That was something. I'll also add that I like the idea that they were going to tie this to Santa Claus and cash in on a creepy Christmas. I think that would have given, they had really gone for it, not just had a couple moments in the dark with a Santa silhouette. That would have been something to bring something new to this. But what I was promised, and why I'm really mad, was that this is the last one, and we're going to get all the answers. And yeah, maybe they're not good at answers. Maybe that was a foolish hope. But I mean, not only do they not give answers, but what they give is bad. Like, this is just confusing, bad. And I would also argue the CGI is hit and miss. When we get the demon bird at the end, I don't think that is great. That isn't something I want to see. It's better than, like, Naked Feet or whatever that they're saying is Toby. But, like, no, this movie in the end is pretty much breaking all of its promises with all of its fans. And that's why people are mad. That said, I'm going to say this much. As much as I didn't like this movie, I still dislike Paranormal 4 more. I do think that because I did enjoy Uncle Mike, because I did think the child actor was good, because I did feel like there was some camaraderie and the ghost camera, they had something going here, and then they just screwed it up, is what it feels like. So it isn't the completely pointless exercise that Part 4 was, but this is close to one of the worst in the series so far. This is not recommend for sure.
And I saw much more of the movie Jacob did than the movie Stuart did. I'll agree that there were portions of this movie that dragged, primarily the second half hour. Again, I didn't have to sit through the cutscenes. You took that mm-hmm. bullet, Stuart. I didn't have to watch the longer cut.
Yeah, or see it twice. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw the shorter cut one time, and I thought that it moved faster than any of the others we've seen before.
Because it literally did for you is the shortest one, I think, you watched.
Yeah.
Plus, you had the extra gimmick of the 3D, which is going to just, you know, color your perspective.
It is, as far as your statement about the CGI being bad. To me, the CGI was all 3D, and so it didn't look so bad because it was out in my face. I imagine if it was just snubbed against a screen, it probably looks terrible because a lot of things that are done for 3D look really bad in 2D these days.
Yeah, that chest-bursting hand is not great looking.
Mm-mm.
Oh, it was the best effect in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I figured it would be.
But again, maybe 10 minutes had any 3D in it at all. I could have just put on the glasses for certain scenes. The rest looked completely the same with glasses on and glasses off. But I liked this family. I kind of like the gimmick of the special camera that can see ghosts. It's moving technology forward. I like the priest. Yeah, I enjoyed watching this as a movie that was spelling out the mythology of the stupidest named demon ever, Toby. Toby will not be up there with Freddy and Jason and Michael in the pantheon of great horror villain names. But I'm going to say this was the second best Paranormal Activity movie I've seen. And maybe it's because I'm not a super fan who remembers every bit of the mythology and can get a little up in arms about which city a house was in. But for me, I just wish the ghost dimension had come a little earlier and was a little cooler than a trip back to a different house in a different year. I would have liked to have actually gone to the demon dimension, but I can squeeze this over to a weak recommend, and I don't see why the fans would hate this one so much, but it is the least scary of all of them, I'll say that.
Let me just give you a quick laundry list. It's not in any way scary. You, as someone that was a purist, once argued, I don't want cheap CGI in it. And then nothing even makes sense. They can't even get the location of the house right. Like, they didn't even care about the detail work. So, yeah, that's angering. You promised me an ending, and you just kind of threw all the pieces up in the air and walked away. That's why they're mad.
And I'm thinking, I didn't want CGI, but if they're going to go that way, and they have been for a couple of movies, at least they're answering questions, they're showing us Toby finally.
They're not answering questions.
Yeah, I don't feel like they answer questions.
Stop with the answering the questions. They did not tell us who that blonde was. There's so much about the original core idea.
Yeah, what is with the army of marked ones? Why do they need a drop of blood?
Okay, cut out part five.
Okay, why do they need a drop of blood from Leela in this one?
Yeah, this is not satisfying. I refuse to believe that when you see this, you go, oh, now I get Toby. I get feet, is what I get.
I just saw the end game of what the rituals were all leading towards, which was bringing Toby to bring about hell on Earth in the 90s.
Which didn't happen because we're watching footage from 2013.
But, you know, we only see the legs. But could that be Ross Perot?
I mean,
it was maybe. 1992.
Yeah, and again, keep in mind they can always go back in time and make Hell on Earth whenever they want to.
I just had a good enough time compared to some of the slog fests that have been these found footage films. I'm tired of the gimmicks. I'm glad we've reached the end of the series, though.
We haven't. We got one more.
They promised this is the end. They bookended it, right? It's done.
Yeah, who would have a question after watching this masterful closing of the book? Yeah. No, there's something that premiered in October on Paramount Network or whatever they're calling
Plus.
It. Plus. Okay, the streaming network. I don't know anyone that saw it. I don't know anything about it. I never saw a trailer.
Do you know anyone that subscribes to Paramount Plus?
No. Like
that's where I start.
I do because of the Star Trek stuff.
Okay. Well, I will be subscribing to it this week and finding out what the hell Paranormal Activity Next of Kin is and if there's a reason why it got dumped to a streaming platform. I'm a little bit skeptical that, I mean, if this movie were really great, they would have put it out in theaters, right? That's just the feeling I have of like, ultimately, they realized this was better suited.
Well, not this year. Like, The Matrix is coming out for streaming day one, so.
And IMAX.
I agree, and I feel there's still a bias that I hold against movies that go direct to streaming, like Red Notice.
That deserves bias.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it.
But it's a $200 million movie.
$200 million vacation for some actors.
But it doesn't feel like a blockbuster. Even though it's Netflix's most watched movie of all time, it doesn't feel like a blockbuster because it doesn't carry the marketing campaign.
No, it's not even that for me. It feels like a cheap action movie. I don't know where $200 million went. I don't have that bias. Like, if it's good, it's good. But whew, that didn't feel like a big blockbuster to me.
I don't think any of you disagree with me. There's something smelly about this, but hopefully we'll be wrong, right? Like, I'm always wanting to like the thing we're going to review. I just don't think I'm going to.
I hear it's a new start, but I'm concerned because Christopher Landon's writing it again.
He made the best one of them all.
The best one in your mind. Still, I don't think anything's beaten number one for me. But is it a new start? Or is if he's coming back, are we going to be trying to fix previous continuity?
Yeah, next to Kin. I don't know who has Kin left at this point to follow, but
I think it's fine to drop everything about Katie and Christy and just go with a found footage horror movie that looks like it involves Amish.
Oh, I don't know. They're still sticking with the found footage. I guess they feel that's vital to this franchise.
Yeah, it looks like maybe this is the coven or the same, an offshoot sect of it. Or maybe it's just Amish people that have never seen a camera before. And boy, when they do, a lot of ghostly things are going to happen.
That butter's going to churn itself.
Well, we will find out next week. Donors, thank you once again for joining us as we went through the Ghost Dimension. And we'll be back with the final bonus podcast in the fall-winter 2021-22 donation drive. And until then, let's get back to the present.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
You know, I've heard of spirit photography before, but I've never actually seen it in person.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
We're so grateful that you're here. Thank you so much.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
This isn't Casper, the fucking friendly ghost you're chasing, man.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders.
I think that probably was illegal in Kentucky, and I'm at 12 states.
They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
A final ritual, and that's where he's going to be.
Is she sure? Then we should call the cops.
Call the cops and tell them what?
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Fuck this shit, I'm done.